I'm starting to have an idea of what I want the ending of this world to be, but I don't think I would just like drop the Cloudy Sky name as like a project. I would probably make, a new world and like new story under it. And like, there's a lot of like other world building stuff that I've done for like other stories that I've not shown anyone or like done anything about that I think would be really fun to explore. And like, because I can't really explore them now while I'm working on this one.
The end of the world is bigger than love, but only by a little bit. A Cloudy Sky took the outside sound, low end, and emotions of EDM, and in his newest album, he's paired them with scintillating indie rock. The choruses rise to the rafters, even as the narrative of There Must Be Something Here descends into a post-apocalyptic world tinged with heartbreak. We chatted with Sky right here on The Woodhouse.
So the first thing I wanted to ask is, you have digital art that kind of goes along with this newest album, and you've talked about the creation process for that can help create the music as well. Can you explain that process a little bit?
Yeah, so definitely like while I'm making the music, I'll kind of also be thinking about like how it kind of ties into the world, into the music. And I think this album especially is definitely the most the two have like ever connected before. So like every step of the way, especially because while I was working on this album, I was working on the music video for Team as well. So I was like constantly thinking about like kind of the direction of the story that each track on the album would take, because I wanted to have this arc about like the two humans that are like in that music video, like the arc of the like relationship between them and like the circumstances sort of outside of their control and like the environment around them played a big part in like the narrative of the music and like how the album kind of like flowed as a whole. So it definitely like I think influences like how I approach the storytelling in each track, and sort of like the mood, especially I think on this album was like, okay, I know what each of these like parts of the story are, and I know that like I need to like create certain tracks, in order to like explain that in the story and album.
So was there kind of a full narrative first, or just like we have these climaxes of emotion I need to kind of hit?
I think definitely it started out as like a climax of like emotion that I really felt like I needed to hit. Because like Quicksand on the album is definitely supposed to be like this like chaotic, kind of like madness driven peak on the album, where Relay is like this kind of introspective moment that I wanted to start out with. And then like from those like general points, I definitely like it was kind of like a backward and forward conversation with like how I wanted to approach and like flesh out the story. So like I had made those like general points, and then from there I was able to kind of develop a lot of stuff off of them.
And you're also exploring a relationship through this kind of post-apocalyptic world. And
Yeah.
at least if I'm picking up on it, there's also kind of a physical metaphor because your characters are descending as the
Yeah.
album goes on and the relationship is cracking apart as well. So it's
Yeah.
multi-layered metaphor. How did that all sort of fuse together for you?
I think definitely working on the music video was like that was a big part of this album, and I think it really did like end up informing a lot of like the aesthetic for like the cover art for like all the singles were just like parts of the music video that I felt like lined up with certain moments on like the other parts of the album, and I think yeah just like it kind of once I finished that, and that happened in like December, I felt like I knew exactly what the story of the album like was and like how it all came together. And like while I was like putting the final touches on it, there were like a lot of like small things I changed with like lyrics and stuff that like just slowly kind of, I don't know, connected all the puzzle pieces that were kind of like loosely laying around with like the songwriting and storytelling that I think got connected like, right after that video got done. So I think that was kind of like the end of that process.
Yeah, so sequencing was almost the last thing for this.
Yeah, I would say so.
Cool. And obviously, you're creating this world in the digital aspect and then making music alongside it. I'm wondering about other artistic influences that are not musical that influenced this album.
Yeah, I think, I mean, a big one are just like, kind of like the many sci-fi concept artists that you can like find on ArtStation. Like a big one for me was like Anton Fadeev, who's done like a bunch of like concept art for this, I think, card game called The Duelist. But like the concept art like that he made for like that game was are just like they're so bright, they're colorful, they're like the worlds that like he creates are like super expansive. And that was definitely like something that influenced me visually. I think on this album I also started like taking a lot more inspiration from like Simon Stålenhag, who actually did the cover art for No Man's Sky, which like I found out like years after like I was familiar with his work. And like that game also, I think aesthetically, like I remember watching the original trailers for it, we were also like we're like, ooh, there's this like colorful, like expansive world. Yeah, that kind of just like idea was like really inviting to me. And like those two artists, the game, also like Hyper Light Drifter was a big one. I love the colors, the pixel art style, and that. So definitely like lots of color, but like also interesting contrasts were like things I was looking for in like a lot of these artists that I was kind of looking up to and like taking inspiration from.
Yeah, how much? Because it's interesting how you're talking about some of the video game stuff, because it's almost, we're not talking about gameplay necessarily. We're talking about ephemera and the accessories around video games, the aesthetics, the emotional moments. Are there other sorts of moments like that that have inspired you? You're talking about Hyper Light Drifter. Is that the same guy? Is it Disaster Piece did that score?
Yes. Oh my God. I wanted to talk about the soundtrack for that as well. I completely forgot to bring it up. But like, yeah, that
Yeah.
soundtrack is like all-time favorite pieces of music for me. That like the opening vignette, like Panacea, I forgot how to pronounce that word, but like that song, the synth work in it is like I had never heard like, pretty like analogy sounding synths like have that much like space and like depth in a mix. And like there was a track I made in like 2017 called Vanishing Point, which was like I made that song like directly after like listening to the soundtrack, because like this like I was just trying to figure out like how he got the synths sounding like that. And I definitely didn't pull it off, but like that I've always like when I'm making music or like working on a synth, I think of that. My dog is like right next to me, like wanting me to throw a ball. But like,
Hi, Doug.
yeah, the like, yeah, that like sound design is like something that's like always been very inspirational to me. But I guess like, yeah, other parts of influence that like aren't music, I guess. I don't have to think about. I think like music videos, I think, are just like another go-to that like I feel like I've been pretty inspired by, like, definitely like the music video for like Acid Rain by Lorne.
It's definitely interesting on the video game side. So I interviewed Disaster Piece
Oh,
a while
awesome.
ago, and I've also interviewed Darren Korb of Supergiants, all of their stuff. And one of the things that seems interesting to me, especially if you look at the history of video games, is how the musical fonts try to become more and more like actual music, like not actual music, but real instruments, going from, 16, 18, 8 and 16 bit to what you could do on the N64 and all this stuff. But at the same time, it feels like, especially in the 2010s, there was a big nostalgic wave of trying to replicate actually some of the sound fonts from the games from the early 2000s.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think like Worlds by Porter Robinson was like a huge example of that. Like when that came out, that was like everyone was like using like going back to like those old video game like sound fonts and like kind of taking the nostalgic qualities of them. And it's like for me, it's not even like a nostalgic quality because like I didn't grow up with like a lot of the sounds that like were in those video games that I think people were like throwing back to. I think there's just like something about those sounds like in general, because like it wasn't just like at least I think for the most part a lot of the like sound effects in the game were like not just like thrown together at random. There was like someone who's like working on the sound of the game to like make it sound nice. And I think like when people go back and like kind of don't have nostalgic quality, it's like it, you're just kind of hearing like what that person who was like making those sounds was like sort of feeling and going for. And like that's the thing that has like always stood out to me, is just like appreciating those sounds for like just the fact that they sound like pleasant things that you'd want in a song. But yeah.
Yeah, and it's almost, some of it can almost be like secondhand nostalgia because you bring up Porter Robinson, but I was also thinking of Flume,
Oh, yeah.
of a lot of that music that they've released over the last maybe decade or so is influenced and specifically nostalgic for the area of video games we're talking about. But that music in and of itself can become nostalgic for people who are introduced to
Yeah,
those things
definitely.
by that music.
Yeah, like art is like always like responding to each other, and I feel like sometimes like the history of like stuff can get forgotten, but it's still like, you know, being inspired by things, putting something out that maybe in their minds like really takes clear inspiration from like specific sounds and like nostalgic things, but like when another person hears it like detached from that past stuff, they only like view it as like that thing existing in it, like the form that that person like put it out. So like, yeah, I definitely understand what you're saying with like Flume. Because like I feel like that kind of future bassy wonk was like happening at the same time. So it was just like the combination of both of those like sort of going in like opposite directions was like a really interesting thing that was like really formative for like me, because like around that time I was also getting into electronic music.
Yeah. You had talked on a different interview before this album. I think it was on the last album about getting introduced to like Skrillex and that, you know, like this really aggressive version of dubstep and EDM. And I was wondering about your personal, alongside Porter Robinson, it seems like dubstep went from, you know, you think Burial and stuff like that in the UK became very popular through Deadmau5 and Skrillex. And now the genre has kind of shattered again into a bunch of different subgenres and influences, that it's not as much this festival super aggro thing anymore. I mean, where are you with sort of using that influence? Because your music can be very maximalist, very emotional, but it's not like hyper aggro, I would say.
I think for me, it's just like there's a very, and I think this isn't something that's like isolated to dubstep, but like a lot of just EDM in general, it's just like wanting to make things sound like larger than life, just like huge for just the sonic quality of it. Like I kind of think back to like dub reggae, where it was kind of like people just like putting like delay and reverb over like these reggae tracks in like for, in order for it to like sound like bassy or like huge. It was like the original like slowed down like reverb kind of thing. And I think that mentality is something that like I think a lot of people, including me, like still have today, which is just like to take sounds that exist and try to make them like bigger and bigger. And I think that was like very prevalent when like that kind of like I guess, yeah, like bro step wave was like happening in like 2012. And like growing up with that, that's like not something I think I'll like ever be able to like completely detach myself from. But like I feel like now definitely I do try and like have a bit more restraint when it comes to that. And like trying not to like make things like so big, it's like overwhelming. But like I don't know, I always just like really like the kind of expansive soundscape that like electronic music lends itself towards. And I think like I always have that in mind while making a track, even when like I'm working mostly with guitars. I'm definitely like approaching things with like a sort of like dubsteppy, like the drums are going to be loud, the bass is going to be loud mentality. So it's like, yeah, it's something like I think about a lot when like making a track, kind of like in the back of my mind, even though I'm like not making music that's like really dubstep anymore.
Yeah, the influence is still there. For you, as you've, you know, released these albums and up to this album, it feels like your literal voice, your singing voice, has become more and more prominent as a narrative, you know, instrument and storytelling instrument. How have you sort of found your lyrical voice over time and used that more often?
That's a good question. Like, I think it definitely started coming more together in like 2020, where like I guess like the pandemic happened, and I just like wanted to talk more in my songs because like I felt more like a social thing to me, I guess, to like be the one singing in your music, and I guess like the desire for that, for like a connection beyond like the sonic qualities of like music, was like an idea that was interesting to me, and that I wanted to explore. And I think like I wanted to do that for a while, because even like as far back as like I would say 2016, 2017, I was trying to have little parts of songs where like I was singing like a vocal passage, and it would be like 10 seconds, and then like that was it for the like the entire song. But like it was definitely something that I had always wanted to expand upon. And I think when the pandemic hit, I just really felt like I had a lot more to talk about, because I wasn't like as much like getting it out with like other people, because it was, a very isolating period. So I think it just kind of further drove me in that direction, and I just went with it.
Yeah. And I mean, for this album, you also, like we talked about before, you have a story narrative. And it's not impossible, but it's more difficult to do a story narrative purely through instrumentation without
Yeah,
lyrics.
definitely. Yeah, I think that's another thing, was just like I had been telling the story with like the cover art, like music videos, and for me there was like a limit that I was hitting. Like, I want to tell people like so much about this world, and I feel like I can't do that without saying words. I was having like just a lot of difficulty with trying to figure out how to communicate certain things just by sound. And yeah, I just it felt like the most sense to just start like saying things that were canon within the world that I was trying to make.
And are there any vocalists that you were taking influence from, whether consciously or subconsciously?
Definitely Elena Tonra from Daughter. Huge influence to me. If You Leave was like my like freshman year like soundtrack in college. It was like when I found that album, it was like my life had completely changed. Like, I knew I wanted to make something that like had that very moody feel, but like they have the big like tom drums and like a lot of the tracks, the like massive reverb guitars. It was very like it was very much like finding the music that I think I had been wanting to make for a while. And her voice is just, I don't know, it definitely, like, when I like hear her voice like in those songs, I definitely relate to it a lot stronger than like I feel like other artists I might have been listening to at the time. There was just like a very human, vulnerable quality about it that I thought was really admirable, and was something that I wanted to explore in my own music. So yeah, shout out Daughter. That's definitely one of my favorite bands.
I really like Daughter too. They're great.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, partially it was almost kind of a joke, but I think you tweeted a while back of like, why is everybody saying everything is shoegaze now? Like, you put a couple of
Yeah.
guitars on it, and my thing was like, no, Claudio Sky's not shoegaze because he's got a baritone voice. Like, I don't know any
Yeah, for real.
clear. Like, you can actually hear the lyrics, and it's a barit. Like, there's a baritone happening. I
Yeah.
don't know any shoegaze that does that.
Exactly. And also, like, there's a specific vibe that I feel like shoegaze, when you say shoegaze, means like it's like I feel like a lot of shoegaze is supposed to be like very ethereal, like dreamy, sort of like washed out, not in the sonic sense, but like it's just sort of distant sounding. And I feel like a lot of like my instrumentation and even like other albums that get classified as shoegaze are like very, they're a lot more intimate than I think what at least what I think of shoegaze is. So yeah, I was just like tweeting that, because like I was seeing it happening a lot on like Rate Your Music Album of the Year, those kind of websites, and I was just like, I don't get this. Why is this happening?
I think it's almost because shoegaze kind of has come back into the fold through TikTok and such. It's
Yeah.
almost the similar to like people just saying things are hyper pop. That's like, what does it mean anyway? Like, I don't know where to
Yeah.
categorize this, so I'm just gonna slap this label on it.
Yeah, I agree. I definitely think TikTok is part of the blame. Yeah, I think genres are very like useful for like classifying music and like if you're trying to find like a certain sound that you like a lot, like it's great to just like have a name for that thing. But I feel like yeah, shoegaze is being very like misappropriated for like a lot of different like styles of guitar music that I'm pretty sure you could just like label as like indie rock. I think that would be like a much better description for a lot of them.
I mean, yeah, I was gonna say I came across your album on Rate Your Music, and for me, I was like, there's a lot of like mid-aughts indie rock. Like, I'm not exactly hearing everything that is being tagged on this.
Yeah, exactly. Internet's crazy.
Yeah. Well, I was also gonna say it feels like going away from the shoegaze stuff, two of the most important musical instruments, at least, or musical aspects that came up to me in the album are your use of toms, like you were saying with Daughter, and bass guitar. Flares has a bass guitar solo in it that is the melodic focus of that song. And so you have come across more as like a low-end focus guy, not in the dubstep way, but in the melody is actually coming from there.
I think honestly it might be sort of in like a dubstep way because like I think I've always my mixes have always tend to lend bassy just because I have in the past really loved listening to songs that you just put on headphones and it's just like they start vibrating in your ears like and I love that feeling so like I'm always like whenever I can I try to write melodies as low as I can before things start getting like really muddy and dissonant, and even like to a certain point, like I'll tolerate it just because like that's just a sound that like I've always really enjoyed. But yeah, I think like yeah, that quality is just like a cool thing that I search out. But it's definitely taken on a different form now.
I'm kind of curious on, we were just talking about sequencing a little bit ago, but there seems to be this like very parallel shift in the record. You go from the first four, Relay to Team, and then the next four, Depths to Ditch. That opening quartet is pretty anthemic, triumphant. The song Team, obviously, you're together. And then the next four are this kind of disintegration of, this what relationship, this team, all those things. I wanted to ask first and foremost about how that narrative shift went for you, but also secondly about, this sudden pivot that, you almost feel like if it was on vinyl, you'd flip the vinyl record and it's like, oh, we're in a dark section now.
I guess like I think the lyrical content in like Team is a lot more downbeat than the instrumental is. So I view Team as like a very like transitional song like into Depths, which is darker, because the lyrics for me are very much about seeing the end of this relationship coming. Like the last lyric I think was like our team won't be the exception, because like I think at that point in the story there's like things happening outside of like the character's control that are not good, and like the world that they are living in. So that's what the character who's like in the story is like talking about, and I'm kind of singing from their perspective. So that to me like ideologically definitely like leads into Depths, even if maybe like sonically it doesn't. So I get there being like a weird disconnect there, but it was just like I don't know. I think because I was focusing on like a lot of the lyrics this time around, some of the like sonic qualities that maybe could have transitioned into that were like not as obvious as like I may have like would have made them in the past. But yeah, I don't know. I think to me that shift just kind of marks the point in the relationship where like there's kind of I'm kind of like thinking about how deep into the lore I want to get here, but like there's this power that's like basically underground in this universe that I'm building where in this time period it's like we're like humans still exist, and it's something that is it's being exploited like for many years as a natural resource, and then it turns out like it was like a bad idea to do that, and
Topical.
topical very top exactly, and it starts affecting the world around them, and that is going on in like the kind of like backdrop of like this relationship happening. But because like I was thinking a lot about like how the world that we live in affects us as people, I was kind of thinking about like how one of these one of the people in the relationship would not be like super affected by this going on, but the other one would. And that is like what kind of causes the two of them to grow apart. And I think Team in like Depths is like the start of where the one of the characters realizes that that's happening and that there's not anything that they as like a single person can do to stop it. Which yeah, it's kind of dark and like making a swivel into that when like the first couple of tracks are like really bright and good, I guess, is like it's definitely like a sudden transition, but I feel like sometimes those things can happen like really suddenly. And like I experienced like a loss in my family when I was working on the last album, and I think I still definitely like had that in mind while working on this one, where it's just like it feels like it's in the background for a while, and then like it happens and it just like sticks with you, and it just sucks. But yeah, I think that's kind of like what the narrative at that like section was for me.
How much do you feel in control of your characters versus they're in control of you?
Ooh, great question. I feel like very much in control of like what happened like with this album. It's more of like the stuff that happens in the future that like I feel like I'm less in control of, like the not human characters like Amp, Isla, and Izzy, who are in the Team music video for most of it. Well, Izzy's not, but like Anthony and Isla are. Their story is much less concrete to me, and is something that I think when I'm working on mu new music, I feel like I have to take into consideration the most is like their story, like what's going to happen with it. So with this album, I was looking into the past of this world that I was trying to make, and I think it was easier to have control over that because there's a very like strict point in the story where that existence of like theirs and like humans in like the world like just like stops. So I think it like that side was very easy to control, but like new stuff in the world that I feel like is more like ongoing in my mind is definitely has more control over me and what I do. That was like a really interesting question, by the way. Thank you for asking that.
It's a very strange thing with the creative process of how much sometimes things just feel like you're a biological catalyst of something, and how often it's very planned out. And you're doing a multitude of different things. You're doing digital art for it. You've got your website up for it. You have internal lore and the music at the same time. So it's like you're spread out against a bunch of different art forms. And it's like, okay, where, it's all our influences in our brain, but it doesn't feel like it.
Yeah, definitely. I definitely feel like I'm being like pulled towards like certain things at like a given time, whether it's like music or art. But yeah, definitely see what you're saying.
Will music that's made under this moniker continue to be in that world, or do you plan or think of expanding out into other places?
I was thinking about that the other day because I'm starting to have an idea of what I want the ending of this world to be, but I don't think I would just like drop the Cloudy Sky name as like a project. I would probably make, a new world and like new story under it. And like there's a lot of like other world building stuff that I've done for like other stories that I've not shown anyone or like done anything about that I think would be really fun to explore. And like because I can't really explore them now while I'm working on this one. I've just kind of like been building up the story and like what I want those to be, but I have no idea what the timeline for that would be. Like I can see myself ending the story with this world and like the next album, or I could do like 5 or 10 more. Like it can really be there's a lot of I guess time variation that I can see myself going through, and I haven't decided about that yet, but I do think I would end this story at some point and then like go on to something else, just because like I do like exploring different things and I want to be able to have this like A Cloudy Sky name as like an umbrella for a bunch of different like sort of anthologies. I think the idea of that is kind of cool, but we'll see.